Blog Talk Radio.
Mode one.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
There is sexual enjoyment, and then there is sexual enjoyment. You can almost put all sexual activities between a man and a woman into at least two general categories, basic and or conventional sex, and experimental and or kinky sex. Up to this point, have you been very bashful about entering into what I refer to as the kinky zone and allowing all of your conservative inhibitions to be disabled and neutralized? Have you been raised by your parents and those in the church you attended growing up to believe that kinky sex is somehow bad and good boys and good girls stay away from engaging in activities that are representative of kinky type sex? My guest this evening is an expert in the area of tantric sexuality, BDSM, which stands for bondage, domination, submission, masochism, and rough, extreme forms of sexual enjoyment. With a background in human development and social psychology, my guest this evening has taught many men, women, and couples how to take their level of sexual enjoyment and orgasmic satisfaction to the highest levels possible in a safe and mutually rewarding manner and atmosphere. Who is this man who possesses a boatload of knowledge and wisdom regarding how sexuality, social anxiety, societal norms, and kinky preferences come together in a romantic relationship? His name is James Amoreau, and tonight Mr. Amoreau is going to raise the eyebrows of many of my male and female listeners as the author of How to Start a Kinky Relationship takes time out of his very busy schedule in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, is this A. Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my God,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, Mode One. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode One, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
mafia. Guess you could say she was a sex fiend. I met her in a hotel lobby, masturbating with a magazine. She said, how'd you like to waste some time? And I could not resist when I saw little Nikki grind.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, March 29th, and tonight's discussion, in my prediction, should be a most interesting discussion because I have a most interesting guest. I met him while I was in Las Vegas. As all of you know, I was the headline speaker at the Direct Dating Summit in Las Vegas. And one of the fellow speakers, he's from my neck of the woods, from the Chicagoland region, and he spoke about how to really enjoy kinky sex. And he had these ropes, and he taught how to tie a woman up, and he had my attention. I was just glued. I was like, wow. Because in my lifetime, confessing some of my personal business, I've indulged in what I would call a verbal sex that was very verbally kinky. I've even had, you know, verbal domination, submission type relationships with women. But I've never really gotten into the physical kinky side, you know, like ropes and whips and handcuffs and all that stuff. I might have dabbled once or twice here and there, but generally I've never really got into it. So he piqued my interest. And then we had just a lengthy conversation about this whole subject. And he's written a fascinating book. And so I can't wait to talk to him. The next few weeks, I don't have any right now scheduled guests. There comes a time in the spring when I usually do a series of what I call open forum discussions. So unless I come up with a spontaneous guest for next week or 2 weeks from now, I'll probably just be doing some open forum discussions, and I will have, you know, my listeners contribute. Those type of episodes really depend heavily on listening audience participation. So I will keep you posted on my website and on Facebook and wherever else on the internet so you know exactly what the topic of discussion will be, what the subject matter will be, and then we'll take it from there. Now, you know, I got love for all my listeners, but I particularly love for my chat room listeners. Where they at? What's going on? Ain't no exciting basketball game on tonight. I mean, it ain't like the Miami Heat in Dallas is a good game. So where's my chat room listeners at? Now, speaking of Miami Heat, my number one most loyal listener is in the house, Adrian, a.k.a. Diva, 37, 23, 39. No, I always modify her measurements every week. It's Diva 36, 26, 36. She is in my chat room, and she's a big Miami Heat fan. I know she's smiling because the Miami Heat right now are leading the Dallas Mavericks. Now, me personally, I could give a fuck about either one of those two teams because I'm a Chicago Bulls fan. I got Big Dog 83. I haven't seen Big Dog 83 in a while in my chat room. What's up, Big Dog 83? I got Aaron 2213. I got my main man, Glendon, in the chat room. Me and Glendon had some discussion. Man, Glendon, I got to tell you, I don't think you realize the last time we talked, man, I dropped my Samsung Galaxy Nexus, and I was traumatized. If you own an iPhone or the Google phone or something similar and you drop it, you just stand there for a second like,
oh, shit. Your heart just sinks to your feet. And that's what happened. I was talking to Glenn, and we was talking about some of these people talking about the Hunger Games, and all of a sudden, my phone just dropped out of my hand. Oh, man, that was... That messed me up for about a good 10 minutes. I was like, oh, fuck. But it's okay. It does have a big, nasty scratch on it now. But it still works. But damn, man. I'm telling you, anybody with a smartphone, you know that feeling when your phone... And I'm not talking about dropping on a carpet. I'm talking about like on solid concrete outside dropping. Yeah. That was kind of fucked up. Anyway, I got Lord Lust in my chat room. I got Lord Lust, and I'm sure a few other people will be making it into my chat room. Other shout-outs would be my older brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry. That's right. My younger cousins, J.P. Jones in Chicago, Arthur Ball in Maplewood, New Jersey, Christopher Curry in Detroit, Michigan. That is right. I got Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin V. Pulliam, the Sir EVP3. That's right. Edie Lee Harris, Vanessa Turner, all the lovely ladies at my Facebook Female Supporters Group. And all my supporters, all the new guys I met in Las Vegas, much love to you, much respect to you. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on, man. Trayvon Martin, you know, I don't know what's going to go on with that. So far, Zimmerman has not been charged. That's the guy who shot Trayvon Martin. The intensity of the discussion has definitely been escalated. Spike Lee inadvertently gave out somebody's wrong address, thinking it was Zimmerman's address, so he had to apologize to a couple. I think he had to give them some money. So, yeah, that's just never give out an address unless you're 100% sure you got the right address. So Spike Lee messed up. But, yeah, man, I just hate, you know, we got Obama as president, but there's still this underlying tone of racial strife, and it just bothers me. It just really, really bothers me. Because I got friends of all races. I got Caucasian friends, Asian friends, Hispanic friends, you know. But I grew up in Gary, Indiana, which for a while was the most black city in the United States. So, yeah, it's just hurting me, you know, with the whole issue involving Trayvon. Then me and Glendon were talking about this movie came out, The Hunger Games. And, you know, people were saying they didn't like Hunger Games because one of the characters was black. I'm like, what the fuck is that about? And she was a little cute black girl, too, played the character of Rue. So I don't know what's going on. I thought we was going to be moving forward, and I feel like in some ways we're taking two steps back for every three steps forward we take as far as, you know, race relations. And it just comes from ignorance. I sum it up, the base root is ignorance. You fear what you don't understand, what you don't know. We got to move past it, people. We got to move past it. Final Four this weekend. Indiana got knocked out by Kentucky. Man, I hate Kentucky, man. I ain't lying. If I got listeners from Kentucky, man, I'm sorry, but I just hate y'all, man. I hate y'all. I mean, I just passionately hate anything with Kentucky on it. I just don't like Kentucky. I mean, you talking about this rivalry goes back like 30 years deep for me, man. I hated y'all since I was like old enough to understand basketball. I hate losing to Kentucky. Man, I just can't stand it. Now, I got to depend on Adrian's Ohio State Buckeyes to knock off Kentucky. Well, first, Louisville plays Kentucky. So Louisville got to knock off Kentucky, man. If Louisville can't do it, then I'm depending on Ohio State. Somebody got to knock off Kentucky. I'm for any team in the Final Four that's not named Kentucky. Because, man, I tell you, I can't stand. Can you hear them, my boy? I just can't stand Kentucky. It's nothing personal. If I got listeners in Kentucky, God bless your heart. But, man, I hate on a basketball level, I can't stand you guys. I hate it. The damn Kentucky, damn it. They announced the most overexposed celebrities, as if any of these were a surprise. Number five, Paris Hilton. I ain't really seen Paris Hilton around, you know, recently. So maybe that's kind of, you know. Number four was the Octomom, the chick who had eight babies. She's the fourth most overexposed celebrity. Third is Snooki from Jersey Shore. I don't watch that shit. So I don't even know who the fuck that is. I don't watch no Jersey Shore. That seems stupid. Number two is Lindsay Lohan. And, yeah, I do get tired of Lindsay Lohan in the media. And number one, it comes as absolutely no surprise, Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian is the most overexposed celebrity. I see Apple Capital Group has joined us in the chat room. I see not misguided, not other people guided, but self-guided is in my chat room along with a couple of guests. I will be right back with my guests so we can start this discussion. Don't go any, I mean, just like don't go anywhere. I will be right back.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So, what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help them and help them and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people. And he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
To know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, "You got a talent for this rollerblading thing." And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, "Yes, I love to rollerblade." I said, "Well, to be quite frank with you, I ain't give a fuck about rollerblading." I said, "Your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex?" And she was like, "Oh my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses?" I was like, "Is that a trick question?"
Please visit www.mode1.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at Blog Talk Radio Advertising at mode1.net. That's MODEONE.net. Don't wait. Do it now. single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. I see I've been joined in the chat room by The Rage. Welcome, The Rage, along with Aaron2213, Apple Capital Group, Big Dog 83, Diva362636, Glendon, Lord Lust, Self-Guided, and a couple guests. I forgot to mention, I'm going to be giving some personal development workshops in Chicago in mid to late May. I'll tell you more about that next week. But I want to put that on your radar. Go to my site, www.mo1.net. My guest for the evening is the founder of the Tantra Logic Group, a sex education and relationship coaching service dedicated to freeing men and women to experience more fulfilling love lives and sex lives. He is a professional psychologist with a background in social psychology and human development. He has expertise in meditation, altered mental states, and mind-body connectedness that has allowed him to experience and share the core elements of tantric sexuality and spiritual practices. And I met this guy in Las Vegas. We had a lengthy discussion. I would already rank him as just one of the most intelligent and articulate guys I've ever met. And he's going to break down some knowledge in the area of kinky sexual relationships, role play, bondage, domination, and submission, the use of ropes. Man, I'm just excited to talk to this very provocative communicator. So, listeners, on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and Upfront and Straightforward, Alan Roger Curry, listeners, give it up for Mr. James Amaral.
Thanks a lot, Alan. I'm thrilled to be here. Man, I got to say, I'm really happy to talk to you again. It's like, when we were talking, I just knew that I was in the company of a much smarter person than myself, and so I'm really happy to hang around with you and absorb and steal all your good ideas.
You're good, man. Listeners, don't believe that for a second. Ain't too many people walking this earth smarter than this brother that I'm talking to. So I got to start up asking you, were you born and raised in the Midwest? How was your, let's say, teenage years from, I don't know, roughly 12 to 17? I'm assuming, and I'm just a big assumption, I'm assuming there was some series of events that was different in your teenage years than, say, the average teenage male that would lean you towards the current interest you have right now. Well, let me just ask you, was there one series of events or one incident that kind of stands out in your teenage / young adult years that just changed your whole paradigm towards sexuality?
I think there were a couple of things that I saw when I was real young and I was sort of figuring out my own sexuality that made this whole kink and rough stuff really, really exciting and really, really dirty, and then later really, really exciting and really, really fun. But first, really scary and dirty. And it was back in the mid-'80s, early to mid-'80s, before there was a lot of cable, you could get satellite television on the UHF frequencies, and there was the scrambled porn that I would look for when I was 12 and 13. I found it on TV, and it was rough stuff. It was bondage and S&M stuff that they were broadcasting late at night on. It was called Spectrum up in the north, in Minneapolis. And I found these Spectrum stations, and for just, you know, half a second, you would see a naked body with chains or something like that. And I'm like, oh, that's exciting. Not only that, I stumbled across my my uncle's Hustler collection, which he had stashed away in the basement. And anyone who's seen Hustler in the 70s and 80s knows that stuff was out there. That was definitely some taboo and rough stuff. So I think being exposed to it, or at least being aware of it early on, drew me to it. And later on, I fell in with, you know, I studied some Japanese and Zen meditation, but you can't learn a lot about Japanese culture and Japanese sexuality without learning about Japanese rope bondage. So that definitely played a part in me expressing myself sexually, that's for sure.
Hmm. Now, you ended up telling me that you... Now, where did you do your undergraduate college?
Undergraduate in Madison, Madison, Wisconsin. Around,
okay.
You know, that's where you learn to meet... every girl that you met at a kegger or at a street party where beer was flowing.
Yeah, I go to the keggers. I went to a because that's University of Wisconsin. That would be a Big Ten school. I went to a Big
Ten
school, Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. Now, and then you told me you got your a graduate degree from the prestigious University of Chicago. Now, when you're at University of Chicago, were you going to these, like, I don't know if they had keggers there, but say similar parties, and by the end of the night you had some woman tied up in handcuffs and a rope? I mean, did this really start developing before UFC, during UFC, after UFC?
Totally. Yeah, it was actually way before, but I came to Chicago. I mean, I was, during my 20s, I was married to my college sweetheart, and she was Japanese, and so, again, you don't spend almost 8 years married to a Japanese woman without learning how to do really, really strange stuff. Stuff that most people just find on the internet. But we got to play with that stuff. And then I came to Chicago, happily divorced. And UFC, University of Chicago, there is actually a small group of people there who are fetish and alternative. But what's really interesting for fetish and underground activities is that Chicago has a really nice convention and dungeon scene. So I started going to conventions, rope bondage conferences and leather conferences. And I went in as a newbie, 32 years old. And I'm like, okay, never seen another person do any of this stuff in person before in my life. Seen it in magazines or on the internet. But when I saw it for the first time in person, I found it a combination of things. Found it a little bit unsettling at first because it wasn't quite to my speed. I saw people doing things like piercings and needle play and blood work, which actually kind of freaks me out. The stuff I like is pretty wild.
You got to pause right here and tell my listening audience, what is needle play and blood work?
Needle play. So in the fetish community, there are all these different kinds of things that you can do that are erotic or stimulating. A lot of them are sensory. It's not just traditional penetration, copulation, missionary sex. It's more than just position. So for some people, they're really turned on by the feeling of their skin, their body being, you know, poked and prodded and whatever. And for some really serious people, they love the feeling of... They love the feeling of actually having their skin pierced. So needle play would be the kind of thing where someone is actually going through, it's hard to describe, it's so vivid in my imagination, would be someone taking a sterile needle, like a diabetes needle, taking a piece of skin or a nipple or a labial lip and piercing, actually working that needle clear through and drawing blood. In some cases, many cases. So that would be needle play. Blood play would be taking any of that blood, and there are people who do things like vampire role play or just fluid bonding, blood exchange. Playing with that blood maybe transferring blood, maybe creating an open wound. There's another notion of this is something called knife play, where this isn't about stabbing, but about scarification, where you make slight gentle cuts, maybe on someone's back or behind, and those very gentle cuts can lead to open wounds. And drawing blood on someone for the right person is really very erotic. For me, my God, the first time I saw it, I almost passed out.
I bet. I do not like blood, and that would freak me out. Woo.
And so what I think is very interesting about fetishes, about these kinds of activities, you know, whether it's leather or blood or whatever, is that the extreme isn't necessarily at all common, and you're certainly not expected to play with the extremes. Since it's kind of like an umbrella community. So the term that they use in the community, the kink community, to describe themselves typically is called pansexual. Pan is a term, I think it's Greek for all. So pansexual, all varieties of sexuality, straight or gay, leather or vanilla, transsexuals, and so on. The pansexual inclusiveness of these events means you see people from all stripes. And it's really something to say, oh, okay, that's extreme. Something I'd never want to do inside, outside the bedroom, never have done to me. But once you see it, you're educated. And now you know it's out there, so that if someone says, hey, you know, I'm into golden showers, it's like, oh, well, that's not my thing, but we can talk about it. I'm not freaked out. If someone says, you know, I'm into power exchange, I'm into rough stuff, like where I might have you pretend to be a robber and break into my house. I say, oh, well, that's actually a lot of fun for me, because that's role play. And role play goes into fantasy space, and I'm very comfortable with that. So in this pansexual world, you see stuff that you would never want to do, but the way I look at it, I think, is it's kind of like a color in your palette when you're painting something, and there are a lot of colors you don't use.
Very interesting. Yeah, because I know when we talked in Vegas, listeners, he told me this interesting story that I'm going to have you repeat about along the lines of what you were just talking about, this role. Now, see, it's so interesting because I've done more so, I guess, verbal role play with a lot of women. But, you know, like, say, over the phone, sometimes in person. But never anything as deep as, like, the stuff you were telling me. Like, I was telling you first that when I remember when I was in, I took a human sexuality class at Indiana University. And one thing I was surprised to find out, and I think most of the guys in my class were surprised to find out, is that women's, like, top five, top ten sexual fantasies were, like, five times kinkier than men's top five, top ten sexual. Most men's was like, you know, I want to have a threesome, you know, I want to bang my girlfriend like on a balcony of a hotel, I want to get my dick sucked in the elevator. You know, it was fairly conventional shit. But like women had fantasies of being just, okay, wait, hold on a second. Somebody said I have an echo going on. Now, James, is somewhere in your place, am I being played on like a computer?
Yeah, I just turned the volume down on the playback, so tell me if that helps.
Okay, because, yeah, somebody from my audience said they can hear my voice echoing. But, yeah, women had fantasies such as wanting to be kidnapped and raped and, or having a group of gangsters just grab them off the street and take them in some abandoned basement and, you know, just abuse them and gangbang them and just all kinds of crazy stuff. And anyway, you were telling me about there's at least one guy, probably more, who get hired to act out these kind of like rape fantasies. Can you briefly explain that to my listening audience?
Yeah, absolutely. This is very extreme. The term that we'd usually use for this is called edge play, because it's way on the edge of what people normally do. Rape fantasy, understood consensually as ravishment fantasy, where someone consensually agrees to, you know, be kidnapped or attacked or, you know, having a rape scenario played out, forced entry and then forced to do something. That's very common. And playing it out is very common. But actually having a stranger come in and someone you've never met overpower you, that can be extremely terrifying. So while it's in the fantasy space for a lot of men and women, it's not something that we would spontaneously act out, you know, on our neighbor, God forbid. But there are people in the fetish community who do edge play and get reputations for having done this kind of stuff. So an example is there's a guy who is in the Northwest, the upper Northwest in the United States, Pacific Northwest, rather, in the United States. And he has a reputation in the fetish underground. I won't name him by name. And he had arranged a scenario where someone he had met online who did not know what he looked like, but he had a reputation, had contacted him. And she said, I'm going to be traveling to the Seattle area for business. What I'd like to do is make sure that we negotiate this and get all the terms and everything real clear. What I'd like to do is make my schedule available to you and leave a key to the extended stay and where I stay so that you have a key. And then during the course of the week, at some time, I don't know. It's kind of like the Pink Panther game where at some point you're going to keep me sharp and there's going to be a contest and he's going to take her down. He's going to act out a rape scene. Like he broke into her apartment. He was waiting for her. He sabotages her and he takes her. Now that's actually really very exciting to someone who is turned on by this idea of force and being overtaken. But the logistics of this are not at all obvious to any of us. So what they did, what they had arranged was there's a safe word. They used a safe word, a very common technique in BDSM. If something goes really bad, you say red or something to call off the action. But what she had done then was published her schedule so that he understood he could do anything at any time, including come in at 4 a.m., come in at 2 in the afternoon, as long as she was able to make her appointments, clean up, and not leave marks. You know, he couldn't leave bruises so that she would show up in the boardroom and have visible signs of this play happening. So, okay, so they negotiated the terms. He would come and go when he wanted to, and what he did is he made a certain perfume. He got this smell. It was a combination of, as I remember, it was jasmine with a slightly acrid smell. So there was an unsettling quality to it. It was sort of a sickly sweet. And what he would do is the day before he would do his attack, he would take a little bit of the scent and put it on the towels in the bathroom. And, you know, maybe in the kitchen area, he would dab a little bit of on the curtains so that there was this presence, this smell that would foreshadow the impending attack. So if she was attuned to it, she would kind of get a sense that something wasn't right. Someone had been here or someone was coming. And that played into sort of that sense of anticipation because all the senses are now at work. And she's, is it going to happen now? Is it going to happen later? And she's picking up on this almost subliminal signal. I mean, he didn't litter the place with it. It wasn't like he had sprayed it in his room deodorizer. It was a very subtle thing that he had done. So this went on for about a year. Every month or so, she would come visit. They would act out this overpowered, violent rape scenario. She would go about her day the next day and then come back about a week or two later and so on. Until about a year into it, where they were at the point where the novelty, the stranger quality had kind of worn off. They had gotten, you know, familiar with each other, yeah, more or less. And so they met up at a conference and, you know, became friends after this because this was them acting it out and so on. What was very interesting was, he tells me, as they were sitting around at this, you know, after classes, they were sitting around in the hotel suite at this conference. He said, here, check this out, to his friend. He said, here, check this out, just as a gimmick. The woman that he was playing with was on the computer back to them at the laptop, and he went and got a little bit of this scent. He actually called it rapist blend, and he got a little bit of this scent, dabbed it on the front of his t-shirt, and just walked over and stood behind her. Didn't say anything, did this very, very, very tiptoe so that she didn't notice him come over, and just let the scent permeate for a moment. And you could see she visibly cringed and shut down. And it took her a couple of minutes to recover. She actually curled up on the fetal position on the floor from the intensity of that experience being so deeply linked to that particular sense. So, I mean, you can see how this kind of rough role play stuff can really get under someone's skin and be an extremely intimate, extremely emotional experience, you know, for some, well, weird, pervy, consenting adults.
Man, that is so interesting. It's like, wow. Right now, I'm going to take a caller. Area code 215. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, James Amaral. And what do you have to contribute to this most interesting conversation about BDSM and rough sex and role play?
I got some kinky stuff, Alan. Jimmy, how y'all doing tonight?
Oh, okay.
Great. How you doing?
I got some freaky stuff for you.
Okay.
Did you ever hear of the s'mores?
S'mores.
Yeah, it's where
James,
you
have you ever heard of that?
It's
no, that one, I don't know that term.
Yeah, it's where you rub fluff on her boobies, and then you insert a finger in her anus with some Nutella at the same time. It's called the s'more.
Wow. Okay. Is that something you practice regularly?
My buddy made it up. I tried it. I didn't like it because it didn't taste like Nutella, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, Lord. Okay, well, thank you for calling in and enlightening us on s'mores. Callers, if you do have any interesting stories, and I mean serious, then, you know, lighthearted, I want to hear serious stories of if you've experienced something related to BDSM or rough sex or role play, a lot of things my guest is talking about. Please, I invite you to call in 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. Now, I have to ask, you know, like a lot of times before you, I don't know, have some kind of undertaking, I don't know, like a new exercise regimen, they will always say consult with a doctor first and make sure, you know, that you're ready. Now, for things like this, does the fetish community have a way of screening people to make sure they're just not, like, psychologically crazy versus just kinky?
So, actually, that's a really, really good question. And the short answer is no. The short answer is there's not a good screening mechanism. But there's a lot going on. So up until, probably the 80s, the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistic Manual, which is used to classify psychological disorders, which for a long time coded homosexuality as a disorder and so on, codes sadism and masochism as a disorder, and other kink predilections as a disorder. So the difference between being sick and being kinky is usually about the healthy or consensual expression of the thing that you like to do with someone who is relatively healthy and consensual about having it done with them, or, you know, six people who are healthy and consensual if it's a group thing. So for example, if you were to look at the notion of forced sex, there's two terms that are out there for the fetish. One term is sexual violation as a rape fantasy. That's one term that's in the DSM. That is, you get off on the idea of someone being forced to have sex with you or forcing yourself on someone. That's different than the term that is used for someone who only gets off on actually committing rape. So the distinction is being made between someone who is doing this in a consensual fantasy way and someone who is compulsively actually committing a crime. But the community itself is really heavily focused on safety, on mental stability, and on distinguishing kinky play from abuse. So, for example, someone who is abusive says, I'm a leather man. I am now part of the fetish community, and I like to beat my wife. Well, that's not BDSM. That's not fetish. That's just plain abuse. Where the distinction lies, usually, is in the knowing consent of the people who are playing. And in particular, you had said that you have done, as lots of men have done, you've done much better and to a greater degree than a lot of guys because you really understand the verbal element. You've done a lot of verbal domination. Tell her what to do. Tell her what you like. Tell her how to act and how to behave and to kneel and so on. And if you're looking at, you know, this power exchange thing, it's useful to distinguish between, like I said, in the DSM, there's sadism and masochism, pain stuff. And, you know, you're sick if you like pain. Well, you know, getting erotically inflicted spankings is very different than getting your hands smacked in the car door. You know, there's erotic pain and there's not erotic pain. And the DSM doesn't do a very good job of distinguishing it, but the community does. The kink and the fetish community do a good job of distinguishing those. So we can understand sadism and masochism as the person who gives pain and the person who receives pain. We can understand domination and submission as the person who gives commands, like you had said, verbal commands, do this, do that, and the person who receives them, yes, sir, absolutely. Or says no, is, you know, a resistant submissive, someone who says, go to hell, and then there's a sprite, you know, or a sort of a resistance play that happens, but it's verbal. And then there's bondage and discipline, which is a little bit more of what I do, where bondage and discipline is about the physical as opposed to the verbal control of the person that you're playing with. And in each one of those, you can imagine it going too far. You can imagine it crossing a line. And everyone's line's a little bit different, but roughly speaking, you know, I've tied up, I've spanked, I've poked, I've prodded, I've fucked a lot of girls who have been in situations where, for an outside observer, they would say, that's vile, that's detestable, that's abuse. But we have an understanding. We have a safe word in play. We've negotiated what we're going to do. I understand what her limits are. I understand what she's not cool with, and I won't do things that will violate her hard limits. You know, if she says no anal, or if she says, you know, no smacking in my ribs, or no tickling. Tickling would be, you know, tickling would call it off. Tickling drives me crazy, and I feel unsafe if I tell you no tickling and you start tickling. Well, okay, I'm going to respect those. And that's not abuse. That's erotic play. And so for a lot of us, we say, well, look, I would not spontaneously do this to a woman that I find appealing because women are, you know, delicate or they're not. Or, you know, or women would say that this is abusive or they won't want me to do it. Well, I got to say, a lot of women love this stuff. A lot of men love this stuff. And to be able to do it carefully and consensually is just so much fun for everybody. But to answer your question, the community itself doesn't have a really good guideline where you screen in and say, well, that guy, he's a healthy BDSM player, and that guy's sick.
Wow. This is just so deep, man. It's so deep. Listeners, if you have a question for my guests or a comment for my guests, call in 646-478-5710. I'm going to let my guests get a swig of water right now, and I'm going to take another intermission break, but I will be back in about roughly 5 minutes, so don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Wait, I want to first acknowledge some people in my chat room who came in. Erica, I don't know how to pronounce that last name, Ghost is in my chat room. Who else new? I think that's the only new person. I have some guests that are in my chat room, and then my regulars. Hello, Erica. Yes, it is a hot topic. Erica, you should call in since you think this is such a hot topic and ask my guests a question or make a comment. But anyway, when I get back, I will have some more questions for my guest, Mr. James Emerald. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavored Tips, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really?
It's over 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay. There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Just so listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like he said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it. Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with book author and social psychologist James Amaral on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the second hour of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. I'm having the most interesting discussion with the most interesting guest. His name is James Amaral, and he is the author of How to Start a kinky relationship, which is packed full of information for, I would say, probably both the novice and maybe the intermediate participant in alternative sexual activities and sexual lifestyle. And okay, now I gotta ask you about something, James. This you have actual these like mathematical looking graphics on page 20 and 21.
Right.
I mean, man, you get deep in this book, man. This ain't a book for a person on a 10th grade reading level. I mean, you got the mean and the standard deviation and wow, man, it just kind of explain.
Isn't that, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm just to play on that. It's like, you know, one of the things that has always bugged me, and it's bugged me personally, it's bugged a lot of people when they throw the word around loosely, is the idea of normal. There's this really unfortunate idea out there about what it means to be normal. And basically, it seems that what normal is whatever I am unconsciously unable to describe comfortable with, or I imagine other people would be comfortable with if I do things that I think are abnormal, and all the rest of it is perverse, is deviant. And I wanted to make the point, and I do this in the book, I wanted to make the point that normal and deviant are sociological terms that are borrowed from statistics. They were sociological terms that were introduced in the late 1800s to describe deviant behavior, was used to describe deviation from averages. In other words, what everybody did is what made things normal, but that did not make it healthy. It did not make it right. It did not make it anything other than common. And I find that the word normal is used to create a lot of post hoc justification and create a lot of shame, a lot of embarrassment, and it creates a lot of internal shame and embarrassment when you say to yourself, oh my God, I'm not normal. Something about what I like is abnormal. And I really wanted to, at least in part, doing this book was in an effort to educate the mass audiences about what a lot of kinky people and S&M people know, which is that deviance and normalcy are just completely arbitrary concepts that are used to either justify or to repress the kinds of things that we do sexually. It's about sexual control of the masses. I mean, this ties in, of course, to the to the abortion issue, to sexual openness, and all kinds of other things. And what I really wanted to do was lay it out there and say, look, if you use normal in any sense other than a statistical sense to make a case about what people should be doing, you have just demonstrated your own ignorance. Because unless you've got a lot of data to say what people are doing, you don't have normal. You have gospels, what you imagine, you have literature, you have what culture has told you to be true. But the only way that normal makes sense is if you take a lot of data and you average that data out. Otherwise, normal is just an irrelevant concept to make an accusation.
Man, brother, you just broke some shit down on my show, because I am totally feeling what you just said. Because on a number, whether it be in person, on various message boards that I tend to frequent from time to time, that is one of my top arguments. Because where I get into that debate and argument with people, and I think you were at my presentation, so you know the main gist of my Mode 1 philosophy.
Yes, and it was a great presentation. Let me just put that out there, just for anyone knowing. Man, you are phenomenally good to listen to.
I appreciate you saying that. I really do. And yeah, you know, one of the things I tend to endorse and encourage is very bold, upfront, straightforward style communication. So, for example, I'm the type, if I was in a bookstore and I saw a woman who I was attracted to physically and sexually, there's a greater than 50% chance I would approach a woman and tell her something like, you know, I would love to just fuck the shit out of you, doggy style. And, of course, women go, oh, my God, I don't believe you said that. But then, you know, if they're attracted to me, they usually reciprocate my interest. But I've had people say, now, Alan, you know what you're doing is just not normal. It's just not normal. People do not talk to women like that. And normal people, and I always ask the question, I say, what is normal? You know, and people, a lot of times they get tongue-tied. I say, you're definite, and matter of fact, one of the first times I learned this, interesting enough, was about that same class I told you about when I took human sexuality in class, in Indiana University. That's what our professor said. He said, basically, never allow anyone to make you feel that anything you're doing sexually is abnormal. He said, if you're doing something illegal, like say you're 35 and you're having sex with somebody 13, he said, you know, in most states that's illegal. But he said, as long as it's within a realm of consensuality, you know, mutual benefit, he said a lot of factions in society will try to have you feel guilty and shamed and feel like you're doing something perverted. But he said, he basically said a variation of everything you said. You just broke some stuff down. Now, area code 707, I saw your hand up in my phone queue. Do you want to say something or are you just listening? Area code 707.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Marcia.
Marcia. Welcome,
yeah,
Marcia.
I thought I had to push one, and so I was kind of feeling into where you were going with this. Well, I am the person who is the expert, shall we say, nationally known for my work both with healing people who have been traumatized and abused by sexual practices and actions that were anything but consenting and helpful. And also because of my orientation in Tantra Yoga as a Tantrika with the spiritual dimension of what our sexuality, I believe, really is. So I have no disagreements to what I'm hearing. I've had friends and colleagues and clients in all kinds of different practices, you know, that they've enjoyed or been troubled by. But as I'm not disagreeing and I'm very pleased with the health of what I'm hearing from both of you, I would be interested in knowing with your guest and Alan how you might view the rough, kinky, the explorations into power dimensions spiritually, if you do at all, when you engage in them.
Well, I'll let James, he mentioned spirituality in his book, so I'll let James go ahead and answer.
I would be interested in your take on that.
Yeah, absolutely. The way that I came into rough sex was completely oblivious to any kind of a spiritual or meditative or any kind of, should we say, a higher practice. But what sex does, rough sex, vanilla sex, all kinds of sex, as you know, as a tantrika, is it allows us, at least permits us, to go into an altered state of consciousness. Our brain is chemically modified in sexual arousal through sexual intercourse and with orgasm. And I have used some of the kinky stuff and lots of vanilla stuff to substitute for drugs and meditation. It's just another way to get an altered state. And what I found is that there are certain partners who will bring out a very deep connectedness, a very deep spiritual as opposed to a rather physical dimension. So for example, you go for a run. You get a runner's high if you run long enough, or it just feels good to run, or it feels bad if you don't like running. And that's just, it's purely physical, even though your body is going into an altered state. You can also run in a very meditative, contemplative way in the right frame of mind. Often I do. Often I have very rough sex with a scene negotiated ahead of time, which creates sort of a context for us to act out, to play things out. So that context is something that we can both interject into our fantasies and introspect while we're doing it. We are experiencing something that is more than just the present physical moment. But in the present physical moment, a lot of stuff drops away, just like in meditation. And this can be very, very spiritual. It can be very, very deep. And with kinky people, typically, they do some kind of an aftercare. So after the event, there's a process of sort of recouping. You know, if there's a spanking scene, that's a lot of intensity. If there's a humiliation scene where you're actually trying to degrade or create that kind of like, you know, hair on the back of the arm discomfort associated with being humiliated in your partner, you want to restore some sense of comfort and respect, because ultimately this isn't about, you know, genuinely disrespecting the person that you're with, genuinely violating them. It's about going into those spaces together safely and coming back from those spaces together safely. A lot of us do this when we're young on with drugs or alcohol. We do this unintentionally, and it's not necessarily spiritual, but we can get into those altered states. When you're using it for very constructive purposes together to create closeness, to create intimacy, instead of merely using intimacy as a device for, you know, recreational, should we say, altered states, then it's an extremely spiritual experience. And that component of it, well, how do you say this? While sex doesn't need to be spiritual, sex can be very spiritual. In much the same way, while rough and kinky sex doesn't need to be spiritual, it can be extremely spiritual. It can be extremely fulfilling to exchange power with someone who, at the grocery store, you are completely equal. In your conscious awareness, in your intellectual sphere, you're completely equal. But I can go then safely and assert some very animalistic things with a partner who is very receptive to very animalistic things. And then we can come back from that. And in a sense, that's very much a spiritual journey.
Right. Can I comment? I'm following you completely here. I'm trying to figure out, because you made a lot of points, where to jump in. First of all, altered states, there are many altered states, and some of them are terrifying, and some of the altered from what our normal experience of quote-unquote reality might be are expanded and deepened, so there's a sense of the mystery of life, and maybe that's more what spiritual, what I'm feeling, where your heart is wide open, and there is a presence and a poignancy. When we, certainly if we are exploring the depths of what two people might, even exploring the psyche together through sexual activity, then there can be a profound intimacy, and it is deeper and more expanded than our usual way of being in someone's presence. And hopefully it would be, for me, it would be a loving experience, because for me, my experience of humiliation or degradation, there's certainly role play in exploring the edges of it, which I do as a therapist with people, or have to do, or go in or have people, you know, do guided visualizations or do processes that take them into those seemingly dark abyss places for me, for the purpose of shining the light on our true value as people, or the lies that we bought into that hurt us, you know, that wounded us or pierced our hearts. But the idea that spirituality and the body, or spirituality and sexuality, are themselves opposed to one another, I think is an unfortunate idea. There is an embodied kind of presence where whatever we're doing that's involving our body, we're witnessing and aware. And if we're connected and our hearts are open, it is, for me, a spiritual experience, you know, by any shape, form, texture, whatever? Is that what you would think?
You know, yes. In the most simple sense, my experience with spiritual sex has been along the lines of taking the mundane and recognizing it as sacred, and taking that which is sacred and recognizing it as mundane. And sex is simultaneously sacred and mundane. Experiences that we have on a day-to-day basis are sacred and mundane. If we are open to the sacred part, we see that. If we see nothing but the mundane and the base, we see nothing but that. And I think in some sense, elevating the action amongst ideally loving, you know, a loving couple or group or whatever. And when I say group or whatever, I do mean that when there are multiple people or multiple partners involved, even the simple template of boy and girl, it comes under question in kinky or alternative sexuality. Maybe boy and multiple girls, girl and multiple boys. It could be boys and girls, and the permutations do become vast, because in some sense we are connecting with another being. In some sense, regardless of gender. Now, our sexual orientation may not be so flexible that we say, well, you're a fantastic soul, therefore I want to do things with your body that, you know, violates my orientation. That may not be the case, but we certainly can participate in these really profound and transcendent elements, the sacred, in very mundane, very conventional, very embodied settings. Provided, like you said, absolutely, that we're open to it and we can recognize it.
Cool. I'm enjoying this a lot more than I expected to. It's great. Thank you.
Thank you. What was your first name again?
My name is Marcia Singer.
Marcia.
I used to be in
right.
L.A.
We
for a long
time. Email. Okay.
I wrote you.
Yeah,
I wrote you. I had... Somebody had sent me this feed called Haro, and I didn't think I'd want to bother, and then I started going through it, and I saw your query there, and I thought, now that's a humdinger.
Marcia, you and James just took this to a whole nother level. Y'all made me feel, I'm the host of this show, and I just felt totally out of my element, because I was like, damn, they really
what a wonderful bridge.
Deep.
You just made, you know, for two people who probably never would have met. And it's delightful to discover the many different ways any human being can find themselves in each other, in the collective, that we're all the same, we're all alike, and yet we're all unique, to dispel all the myths. I love that there is no normal, although there certainly is consensus reality, and that can be a problem for anyone who doesn't fit the mold, and most of us don't.
Unfortunately, a good source of shame. And, you know, to be able to alleviate some of that shame is through education.
Yes, absolutely. I did years. I did not know until I was almost 50 years old. I'm psychic. I started having all kinds of body memories of molestation. And scared to death, I went to a therapist, and we started, then past life memories started coming into me of all kinds of abuse. And simultaneously, people started finding me out in the community, and everybody who was coming to me for therapy had been raped, incested, you know, something, physically beaten in a lot of cases too, almost aborted from childbirth. I mean, what an education I had in the 90s. And then from that I've kind of burst into all this energy, kundalini, all this energy coursing through my body. And I had then to understand what the hell was going on. That took me into tantra. And I'm also a shaman. I'm a contemporary shaman. It's like, I never thought any of this was going to happen in my life. But then I would be a therapist, somebody who grew up in the Midwest in an incredibly conservative environment, would have people who were flashers coming to me for therapy. This fellow who was addicted to going to a dominatrix who would pee on him, and he felt humiliated and he couldn't stop. And this was my introduction to some of the abusive side of people trying to find themselves and not having the concepts or the education or the support. And so they find themselves, you know, in all these crooked ways of expressing that are just piling the pain on the pain. And I'm just really appreciative of all the different kinds of creatures we are. And that you can be clear and helpful.
I think that zeroes in on it is piling pain on pain, finding an unhealthy or non-constructive, should we say, outlet for this. And what I hope to do, I've when I meet people and I work with people and I sort of advise people on how to meet people who are like-minded, how to express what they're interested in, how to do this in a way that doesn't seem creepy and pervy and all of the other kind of unfortunate connotations, a lot of it is finding that there is a really, really constructive, very healthy, a very acceptable way of expressing and playing with this stuff. But to be clear, you will not find this in mainstream media, nor, in my opinion, should you. We're not at a stage culturally where, as a large population, we could accept this. We deal with things like the economy and whether or not in Mississippi we should even discuss contraception. So at this stage, my observation at least has been that people are repressing it. And as a result, the things that you had described, someone going to a dominatrix to be peed on because they want to express this in some way, but they don't know how, they become neurotic about it.
Yes.
They become ashamed that they want to do it. We Roger and I were discussing the movie Shame, which came out recently about a sex addict, sort of a dramatization of a sex addict. And in fact, there's a lot of shame just about being sexual, which is unfortunate.
Yes.
Shame about sexuality manifests itself as abuse and as violence and as molestation, and that's tragic.
That's exactly what happens if a person is not introduced to ways to express that are natural. And I mean natural in the sense of organic, you know,
mm-hmm.
That allow you to be safe and happy and right in your own skin, then we will have detours. And those detours themselves very often become shamed, and our self-images are rotten. People, you know, then will either rebel or repress themselves or all manner. I have yet to find people I could count on two hands that really are happy in their own skin, with their own bodies, our whole culture is so screwed up. And, so I'm pleased that people whose leanings sexually are very different from mine and who would be shuddered at when you... I remember there was a store a friend of mine owned. A friend of mine was in the sex business in L.A., and they owned a gift shop, and they also did wonderful workshops, and they happened to be tantricas too. And they had books on S&M and bondage and so forth, and I remember being shocked that right next to the tantra books, when I looked at them and I thought, I get it. You know, because if a person is standing in their own ground, present, your heart is open, you're in a good place, you're healthy, then the world is, you can explore all kinds of activities, actions, behaviors, expressions of the broad human, the vast human arena.
Hey, Marcia,
and learn about your humanity in that
Marcia,
world.
Marcia, let me ask you a question. Since James
sure,
has been talking
I'm sorry
about...
I'm talking too much.
Oh, no problem. No, I'm enjoying it. I just wanted to ask you, though, since you do say you kind of look at this whole world from two angles, and James has been talking about it, of course, from the what would be known as the sex-positive angle.
Yeah.
What have been a couple of instances that you've known, I don't know if you work with clients or whatever, where, say, somebody wanted to really enjoy themselves in the world of BDSM and rough sex and kinky sex, and some incident got taken too far. Can you give me one incident, and what was your advice, or how did you help this person deal with that?
Well, you know, the only one that I, most of the people that came to me were healing from specific injury, usually as children, you know, or youngsters. But something related in a way, although not nearly, not severe this way, was a couple that I worked with for a couple of years, and they were swingers. And they came in initially because they wanted to learn, they wanted two things. They wanted to be able to add tantric practices, and none of their swinging partners or the couples that they associated with were into that at all. And secondly, because sometimes what was coming up was the husband who wanted to try everything and wanted his wife to feel free to try everything, didn't realize that his wife was feeling scared, cut off. There were things she didn't want to do. She preferred to be with her husband. And yet she wanted him to be happy, so she would agree to all kinds of things to do or with other, you know, other men or partners or threesomes, whatever. And she was really hurting. And this had gone on for two or three years. And they hadn't been able to realize they had a communication gap. So the solution for them was actually quite lovely and simple. He didn't want her to hurt. He didn't know that she didn't want to try everything, because that was his idea of the most wonderful way to be sexual. It was not hers. Hers was to be with him. And yet she wanted to have an opportunity to explore. So she agreed that she would continue to agree when she felt like it to do these things. But if she was, if her heart was closing and she was starting to feel scared or whatever, they had a signal. She would pull on her earlobe, or she would say a word if he wasn't looking. And if he got the signal, or when he got the signal, he would know that he needed time out. He would go talk to her, and then they could stop, cease and desist, go home, you know, whatever. So they simply communicated, and it fixed it for him.
Mm.
So that was a nice solution. That was a fairly easy problem, and yet it had been going on for 2 or 3 years with a poor wife who was ashamed and embarrassed and thought she was letting, she'd be letting her husband down, you know. And he was clueless.
Wow.
He just was, he was complaining, though, because his wife seemed like she wasn't being happy. She was, you know, she wasn't being spunky. She wasn't, her energy wasn't up the way he wanted it to be. And he thought, he didn't know what the problem was. So it was really very sweet when he discovered that his wife just really wanted to be with him. And if, you know, if it made him happy for her to explore other things or to do threesomes, foursomes, or whatever, she would. But she had to have the awareness that the thing that was the most important to him was her well-being and happiness, because they were in a committed, they were each other's core partners.
Right.
So that was the one that came to mind. That was
interesting.
A happy, happy ending.
Listeners, if you have a question for my guest, James Amarole, or a comment or an experience you want to contribute, please call in 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. I'm going to take my last intermission break for tonight, but I will have some more conversation, more questions for my special guest, James Amarole, in about roughly 5 minutes. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Mode One.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist. I'm in love with a
is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex disease.
This is Nikki Trum, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Brandy L. Davis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.com.
All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Oh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Seducing sexy ladies. Here's the deal.
My name's Sasha. Hello. And I like women.
Hey, everybody.
This website has tons of resources to help you guys get that success that you want. It's all there for you. The articles, the videos, my blog, with lots of adventures and tips. It's all there for you guys.
Let's make the magic happen.
If you're interested in some more intense training, take one of my boot camps. They are fucking good. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm doing boot camps all around the world, so I might be coming to your city.
I would love to come over there and teach you this stuff because it's awesome. And you learn how to meet tons of hot girls. If you're in London, this is the guy. He's going to take good care of you. He's really present in the moment. He's really good. He hooks up with tons of girls. Good teacher and just somebody you want to hang out with and learn from. Oh, so many names.
It's my first name and my...
Okay. Well, I will see you.
You will?
Ryan.
Ryan. Me too.
Over the last few years, I've dedicated my life to getting good in a sort of fun and natural way of meeting women in the daytime.
What are you doing actually in your free time? What's your goal?
I meet beautiful girls on the streets. You know, chat girls on the streets. Sound test? Sound test 1, 2, 3, 4. Sexy man. Hi. Can I get a little fist action? We're filming. Just one little fist. Just come on. You know you want to. You know you want to fist me right now. Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, check out the bootcamp page if you're interested in that.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's useful to you. So please.
Sasha@sashapway.com. Thanks for coming to the site and...
Stop being a fucking... Just... What... Come on, people. She's there in front of you. That's the only indicator of interest you need. She's there. You're there. Go for it.
Please pay a visit to www.sashapua.com.
Single, lonely, confused, join me.
I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview with book author and social psychologist James Amaral on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the last segment of tonight's episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. I have been having a conversation with a gentleman I met in Las Vegas, and he has a very thorough book about alternative sexual relationships. It's entitled How to Start a Kinky Relationship, and it's a big book. It's not your class typical or conventional 5x9 inch. I mean, it's a big old, I don't know the measurements, but it's a big book. It's just packed with information. And I'm just I'm probably only about a fourth to a third of the way into it, but already I have just had my eyebrows raised and how he just breaks everything down related. Now, James, I want to ask you, I was reading this article where this guy named David Lee, I think his name is, came out with a book saying essentially that he believes sex addiction is at maximum bullshit and at minimum highly overrated and inappropriately assigned to people. What are your thoughts on the concept of a man or woman being a sex addict?
Okay, so it is bound up in the way that we use the term addict. So I know a girl very well, very close to me, who would call herself an iPhone addict. Well, I don't think that the iPhone counts as an addiction, but they did surveys, studies on people and their Blackberries, for example. You know the Blackberry has that little red light that flashes up when you get a new message?
Yeah.
And people who compulsively look for that new message signal on the Blackberry actually are dealing with a kind of uncertainty in their brain. Ooh, do I have a message yet? Do I have a message yet? Which is a little bit like the kind of reward that a mouse gets when they push a button and they're not sure whether or not they're about to get a dollop of food. It stimulates the same reward centers that cocaine does, as it turns out, in the brain. So the brain does chemically respond to certain behaviors that we would loosely term or lump together as addictive. I mean, if you think about it, sex up until about, 100 years ago, the pill is, now 60 years old. Up until recently, sex had a pretty big cost associated with it for a woman. And yet women had a lot of sex, and there are a lot of people as a result. You know, making a baby just because you wanted to, just because you felt the urge to hook up was a pretty big deal. And so in order to make that experience kind of worth it, if you think of it as an investment of 9 months plus 18 years in most cases, that had to have a huge, huge reward in your neurochemistry, in your brain centers. So the pleasure centers of the brain are absolutely actively paid off in copulation, in having sex, in looking for sex, in craving the fix that would be associated. So as a metaphor, as an analogy, I think addiction is a useful metaphor. It's useful to understand. It's addictive, much like, man, I'm totally addicted to these chips. Much stronger than the chips, man, I'm totally addicted to working out. If I don't work out, I feel horrible. Those are very real feelings, real sensations. If I don't find sex, I go through a withdrawal period. My brain changes, you know? When I say that I'm addicted to caffeine, I don't mean that lightly. I've given up caffeine several times and had very, very serious headaches associated with that. My body has become fixated on it. But it's different because of the way that we use the term between a chemical substance that we depend on and an activity that we depend on. So the term addiction is just an unfortunate term because it doesn't really precisely say what we mean. Are there people who really, really need sex? Like if they don't blow their load, if they don't come, they're going to go crazy? Yeah, I think there are people who will lose focus, not be able to function. So I think the better criteria than saying it is or is not an addiction becomes the criteria that we use when discussing things like are you dependent on something? So if you are out cruising for sex, if you're trying to find a partner, if you're doing things that you feel really bad about and it starts to interfere with your everyday life, that's a real thing. That's a completely real thing. You know, people who go out and they cruise for sex and it interferes with their life and they are unable to get their, you know, rent paid because they're missing work, because they're looking up porn. That's a real thing. Mm. But to call it an addiction is just a matter of terms.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I've heard people say that in a lot of sexual relationships, whether it's even a conventional relationship or a kink relationship, that you cannot have a man and woman who are both dominant or a man and woman who are both submissive. How would you explain the whole, in your book, you talk about masculine, feminine polarity. I don't know how that relates to the kind of yin-yang and dominant, submissive, but what type of dynamic do you have to have in order to have a just outstanding, you know, sexual chemistry between a man and woman?
Sure. Well, I think the main thing you got to look for is fit, is fittedness. So, for example, it's not the case that men are dominant. What we can say is most men are dominant. We can also say there's a thing called, the technical term for this is sexual dimorphism. It's the reason that lady ducks and boy ducks look different. As it turns out, females are less colorful. The males are the ones who are trying to show off their duck prowess. They're the ones with the pretty translucent feathers that catch the light just so that they can show that they're genetically healthy for the female. So we have the sexual dimorphism. Well, in our species, that's true too. Men, on average, tend to stand a little taller, tend to be stronger. Clearly, we have testicles. Women have all the other parts. So we have a sexual dimorphism. So we need to respect that. If we lose sight of that, we say, well, everyone is equal, and there is, and we get confused about a sociological normalizing plan where everyone is the same. Everyone converges on average, and that doesn't do anyone any good. So your question, which was how do you find that dynamic and what about people who are a little different and switches, is you've really got to know yourself and what gets you off. So one of the things that I found was, you know, I had instinctively taken to I'm a craft guy. I'm good with my fingers. You know, I like to woodwork. I play an instrument. I like to work with my hands. Well, it turns out that when I'm tying rope in particular, doing Japanese rope bondage, I get into that same kind of like flow, that good feel state of this is fun. This is great fun for me. It's like working a project. It's like, you know, in Boy Scouts, setting up a tent or starting a campfire. It's the same kind of stuff that I really enjoy because it's got a craft quality to it, an artisan quality to it. My rope is elaborate. My rope is actually pretty sloppy, but it's very functional, and I really enjoy it. So because I know that, I said, well, okay, I've instinctively kind of topped and so on, but in these conferences and in other settings, I found, you know, people, men and women, who were rope tops. Women who are rope tops are very common. I would say that if we were to look at this statistically, the sample size of the population, most women respond better to submissive tendencies than men. more women, you know, more than half, maybe two-thirds or 80%, somewhere in there, tend to respond really strongly to sexual submission compared to men. But that doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of women who are dominant. And there doesn't mean there aren't plenty of men who are submissive. And so finding that out, sussing that out is important. So I received rope from a rope top, a woman who was a rope top. She tied me up. And what I found was I learned a lot from the experience. She showed me a lot about how to tie the rope. I could really see how someone who was in her harness couldn't get out. I saw how I could use this stuff for my own sexual escapades. But I also found that my penis was totally flaccid. You know, this was not a turn on for me. So knowing that about myself kind of gave me enough insight so I could say, you know, loosely, I am a rope top, or more accurately, I like to tie. I like to be in charge. I like to tie. So when I find a prospective mate, it comes up very quickly that, you know, if we click or we like each other, or there is some sexual chemistry, I really want to find out if we're sexually compatible, because an otherwise beautifully attractive woman who is not into what I'm doing is a beautiful and attractive woman who I'm not rightly attracted to, who I would love to go find a good partner to play with. So I'm looking for that compatibility. So for some couples, it's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to do this to you this week, and then you're going to do it to me next week, and we're going to go back and forth. And there are switches or versatile couples who do that all the time. But as it turns out, I'm not one of those. I'm in charge. I'm a control freak. That's my fetish, and it's what gets me off.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm very much a control freak. Now, I heard you when you were having your discussion with Marcia, I want to say her name was. You briefly mentioned about a power exchange, and like you were just talking about switches. What exactly, explain to my listening audience, what is a power exchange?
In the simplest phrasing, power is giving someone authority over you. Granting someone power. I mean, power is it's kind of a crazy concept if you think about it. We give people power all the time. We give people power over us that they don't rightly deserve. Someone with a suit on has the power to influence our thinking unconsciously. It's a basic influence tactic to dress in a uniform, to convey authoritatively through gesture or through motions that I'm in control and in charge, and we grant them power. We grant them authority over us. Now, someone can take power. Someone, you know, when you're looking down the barrel of a gun, you had mentioned in the opening about Trayvon and so on, it's like when you're looking down the barrel of a gun, someone has taken power from you. But in most social settings, we give people power. In erotic power exchange, we're talking about giving someone power to access some of the most intimate personal arenas, you know, physically, emotionally, psychically, and taking that power and using it responsibly. So in a power exchange, for example, if I'm into if I'm playing a, you know, a rough sex scene, what I want to do is make sure that we've negotiated who's going to do what. You know, I'm basically, can I touch you here? Can I touch you there? Can I do this to you? What must I not do? And so on. So we understand what the scene is. But then when I'm in control, I will do whatever moves me. And what you're looking at then is the will of my will being, as it were, inflicted on a I like to distinguish between a consenting, not necessarily compliant partner. So consent is agreeing in advance, no, this is okay. You can do things like, you know, you can spank me, you can tickle me, you can, you know, choke me, don't kill me, but do some of these things that are very rough. We can do all that stuff. You can't do, for example, you know, you can't poke me, you can't cut me, no anal, whatever the boundaries are, we would negotiate them. Once we've negotiated those, it's my will being inflicted on someone who, in an ideal setting, she could resist. She could do whatever she wants. She could go into some of that scared space knowing that it's safe. She could go into that, you know, resistant, I don't want this to happen. I have such terrible feelings, being flooded with that fright. instinct. You know, as Marsha and I were talking, I thought the apt comparison is people who love roller coasters or jumping out of airplanes, thrill seeking. Well, that's fun. That's a great amount of fun to go to a amusement park to get the wits scared out of you, but to know that you're going to come down safe. Very few of us would jump out of an airplane with no parachute and hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. That's a good analogy. Now, there was an interesting discussion while I was in Vegas. I don't think you were around at the time, but I got into a kind of a spirited debate with a couple of fellas about the concept of cheating. I am,
right.
I tend to be totally against cheating because I feel, among other things, it's just cowardly. I feel like if you want to fuck three different women, you should have the balls to say, I want to fuck three different women. Now, I was reading page 98 in your book. You have a brief section about cheating. I wanted to ask you just generally, what are your thoughts, perspectives on cheating? And more specifically, you talk about the idea of cheating legally, like renegotiating the terms of your relationship.
Yeah, right, right.
So if you can elaborate on that for me and my listeners.
I think it's actually... So one of the things that I found was that I like the idea of multiple partners. I love the idea of a one and only, of a soulmate. I love that idea, but in practice, that hasn't worked out very well for me. When I was married, I was happily, loyally married, but that didn't mean that I wasn't aroused by and turned on by other women or the prospect of other women. I just exercised enough restraint that I stood by the vows that I made when I was all of 24 years old, and I stood by them until I could no longer stand by them. And then I said, well, I think we need to do something else. We went through counseling. We went through therapy, and then we ultimately decided that we were going to divorce. It wasn't just about sex, but it was certainly about, in some sense, the partnership that we had made was no longer working for us. So to me, cheating is reneging on what you agreed to in the first place. In most cases, I feel you should probably make a lot fewer promises than you actually make as a man and as a woman, either one, anyone. Make fewer promises and then keep them all. So instead of promising, I will be exclusive to you and until death shall we part, and there will be no other that I am ever the least bit remotely going to be interested in because I can forecast how I will feel sexually about myself in 10 or 20 years. And I have somehow the magical presence of mind to know that when I get the opportunity to see some young secretary in the office, I won't find her the least bit attractive and nothing will happen in a late night, you know, meeting. Instead of making promises we can't keep, make fewer promises, make very realistic promises. To me, cheating is unfortunate because we don't need to cheat. We need to be careful about what we promise. We need to be careful about what we say. But frankly, most of us, I'm going to make the case that most of us would be much happier with the hard truth, much happier, much healthier with the hard truth than by having an elaborate story or ruse or lie presented to us and then dealing with the consequence of finding out eventually that it wasn't the case. So as far as cheating, my feeling is if you want to do something, know what it is that you want to do, be honest with yourself, which is the hardest thing to do. And then once you're honest with yourself, you really don't have to make very many promises about what it is or you're not doing. Now, I understand when you have the define the relationship talk, what are we doing here? Are you seeing other people? That can become thorny. But if you really know what you want to do, it's not so much a matter of having the conversation or, oh my God, he or she is going to feel bad about what it's that you're being honest. You're being straightforward about where you're at and what you want.
Uh-oh,
and in some
wait,
sense,
you
if
said
the person
word.
You're with doesn't want what you want, you're not a good match.
Please repeat the S word you used just a couple minutes ago.
Oh, the S word?
Because it's part of the two primary words in the title of my show. You said about being straightforward.
Straightforward. I mean, being straightforward about what you're doing can be hard. But do you know the reason that it's hard is because you're not cool with it yourself. Once you're cool with it yourself, once you're really aware of what you want, once you know what it is that you want, this need to kind of paste on stories kind of just falls away.
Man, I so agree with that. Because, you know, it's funny because when I do consultations with guys, one of the things I always tell them, and again, you probably heard this when I talked about my presentation, I said the starting point of being Mo 1, which essentially means being upfront and straightforward with people, is knowing what you want. Because I said the biggest lie people tell themselves is I'll hear people say, oh, man, I was talking to her, but I didn't want anything from her. Or a woman say, I was talking to that guy, I didn't want anything. And to me, that's bullshit. You always want something. You may not always want something tangible like money or sex. It could be you want to be entertained. It could mean you want that person to display a certain level of respect towards you during the conversation. But you always want something. But in addition to that, I always tell guys, you should have an idea of what you want before you even start pursuing a woman. I hate to see guys pursuing women and they'll say, yeah, I'm pursuing her, but I don't really know what type of relationship I have. I rarely, if ever, do that. I know exactly, usually, when I pursue a woman, if I want, say, long-term versus short-term, monogamous versus non-monogamous, or in those rare cases where I might be, I don't consider myself undecided. There's cases I consider myself flexible. I might start off with one type of relationship, and I'll say I'll leave the option open to elevate it to a different type of relationship. But anyway, yeah, your point is a very good point of knowing what you want. And so I only got a few minutes left. I just wanted your last point I'm going to ask you, explain to my listening audience and I, what generally does it mean to melt the vanilla?
Right. Okay. Vanilla is used, loosely speaking, to contrast stuff that we do in the bedroom with anything that's kinky. So vanilla would be, oh, I don't know, missionary sex, when you're not on your period, once every week in a committed relationship, exclusively, monogamously, whatever. So vanilla is used to contrast. It's sort of the term that says, well, I'm not into the weird stuff. And the weird stuff being, well, it doesn't matter. Weird stuff could be doggy style or anal or kinky or whatever. It's just, it's could be leather fetish. So melting the vanilla is this idea that for a lot of us, we actually have these fantasies. They're latent in us. And the reason that they get repressed is because we're afraid someone's going to judge us, in particular the partner that we're with or that we're involved with or that we want to be with is going to judge us. And, oh, my God, they're going to think I'm a pervert and I got to defend myself and it's going to be a mess. So we'll just have this really, really bland, boring vanilla sex. And melting the vanilla is just kind of about getting it out there, you know, being able to talk about the kind of stuff that you're into or might be into or bringing up the kinds of things that have crossed your mind. You know, if your girlfriend or someone that you were seeing or someone you were really interested in, you know, prospective girlfriend or your hookup buddy or whatever, we say, hey, you know, I saw this crazy cool thing on Jenny Jones or Dr. Phil or wherever, and they said that you can do this in the bedroom. We should get some dice and throw them. And then, you know, if the dice say, you know, closet or living room, we have sex in the closet or living room, we're going to do it that way. And they started initiating this. You'd be like, oh, man, I'm all over that. That's great. That sounds like fun. And what they're doing, in fact, by doing that, is taking what's normal routine and breaking out the routine by bringing up some adventure, by in some sense, blaming it. Not quite what they're doing, but they're kind of blaming it on Jenny Jones or Dr. Phil or, you know, wherever they saw this thing. I read it in Cosmo. It's fine. In what I'm trying to do with the book, I mean, if you get a copy of the book, part of the reason it's big is that it presents well. You can throw it on the coffee table and say, oh, what is this? It makes for a very interesting conversation starter. And part of it is a workbook. You can look through and see what you're interested in. But by having the book there, the book takes the responsibility off of you. If you're interested in some kind of unusual or unconventional things, in the back of the book, there's a checklist of stuff that you would never do. But what's fun is some of that stuff's very titillating. and your partner is going to be titillated by it. You're going to be titillated by it. And some of that stuff you absolutely can try. But starting the conversation is so darn hard that what I call is melting the vanilla, is taking this idea that, all right, we're going to do vanilla because it's safe. We're not going to be judged. We're going to be tea and scones polite. We're going to figure out what the other person thinks of us. And then at some point, we're going to get to the real sex. Well, that point never comes. With this, by melting the vanilla, you can bring that stuff up. It's like, what's the craziest thing you've ever tried? Are you into, you know, 24-hour sexual slavery, indentured servitude for the weekend? Would you be into public humiliation and blindfolds and, like, you know, handcuffs in the car? It's like, oh, I didn't even know that that kind of stuff was out there. It's like you said, women are way more creative and curious and adventurous than guys, and they have that stuff kind of inhabiting their head, but we can't talk about it. So by melting the vanilla, we get a chance to talk about it.
Okay, well, man, I really enjoyed this conversation, as I did in person with you when we were in Vegas together. And just as a final wrap-up, please tell my listening audience where they can find your book and possibly find out more about you.
Sounds great. Yeah, you can find out about the book and about what I do at tantralogic.com. It's TANTRALOGIC.com. And How to Start a Kinky Relationship is the book. You can find it on the website, and it's available through Amazon. You can get it at you can order it at any bookstore too. I strongly encourage that you check out the website, subscribe to the newsletter, and you know, I share some tips and tricks for people who are interested. And I'm absolutely happy to help anyone in any way that I can, so they can contact me. Anyone who's listening, anyone who wants to, contact me through the website. My information is out there. And we can talk and make sure that, you know, everyone's having really, really fun, exciting, awesome love lives.
Exactly. That would be an understatement, folks. Thank you so much, man. Continued success to you. I will surely be connecting with you, man, in the near future, since we're fairly close to each other here in the Chicagoland region. But, yeah, man, just continued success with the book. And I just hope some listeners tonight have been enlightened by it. Listeners,
spank someone happy, right?
You said what?
Spank someone happy.
I like that. I've had to borrow that. Spank someone happy. Oh, man. Didn't I tell you love this guy, listeners? James Amaral, join me next week. I'm probably, again, I don't have a guest schedule. I'm probably going to do an open forum discussion on whatever topic I choose to. I usually pick a topic for my listening audience that has strong feelings in favor of that issue, and also an equal amount of people who I feel are against that issue. I'll keep you posted. Until then, have a safe and enjoyable weekend. And I will see you right back here next Thursday.